scores! Gilmore scores! With 1:03 left!
Off the glass, to left corner to Aguila. Aguila to the left circle. Passing to Yell, a shot. Save made by Aguila. Rebound, another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers.
Okay, let's get at it. Happy Thursday as we welcome you to the Scotiabank Saddledome. Welcome to the Hot Stove Lounge and welcome to this hour of Flames Talk. It's Thursday, February 6th. And with Aaron Vickers of NHL.com, my name is Pat Steinberg. We're available on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcast. Busy hour ahead. What's going on, Vix?
I am just ready to have a times over here, Patrick. We should get to it.
We've got a good hour ahead for you here. Daily Flames Roundtable coming your way in the bottom part of the hour, the bottom half of the hour. But one of the big topics in this market right now, one of the big topics surrounding the Calgary Flames right now as we dive right in is this blue line, is the group of defense they've got right now. And for Thursday night versus Colorado, making a few changes. It'll be Daniil Miramanov coming back into the lineup. He'll shift onto that second pair once again with Mackenzie Weegar. So in comes Miramanov. Weegar shifts to the left. Miramanov on the right. That bumps Bean back to the pairing with Braden Pahal, and it bumps Tyson Barrie out of the lineup. But Vix, they are clearly missing Kevin Ball right now.
Oh,
and
yeah.
That has become abundantly clear over the last week and a bit here. And he'll be back sometime after the break, but as of right now, it has become more and more glaringly obvious how much they miss big number 7 on this blue line, hey?
Well, and good for him for putting himself and working himself into a position to be as missed as he is, because when you think back 4 months ago, he didn't know exactly what he was going to be. And in all fairness, he was playing in the Eastern Conference. You see Jersey twice a year. You see them once up close and personal here at Scotiabank Saddledome. And for him to establish himself as a top four defenseman, and as you mentioned, a much needed top four defenseman, a much relied upon top four defenseman, is really a credit to him and how he was able to adjust to a new team, adjust to playing alongside Rasmus Anderson in sort of a top pairing role, playing north of 20 minutes a night.
And doing that all without, he didn't get a lot of time to do it, right?
No, certainly not in training camp, but to get one game in, the final preseason game in, and now all of a sudden he's emerged as a player that's reliable against the other team's top lines. And that's not an easy task for any defenseman, much less a guy in his first year with a new team, much less a guy that is in really his second full season in the NHL. Good on him for making himself this valuable. At the same time, when he's not in the lineup, as we've seen, you really get the sense of how much he is missed by the D-Corps and the coaching staff.
So knowing that, even when Ball is ready to return, so let's say he's ready to come back for the first game out of the break, that Sunday night game, the 23rd, against San Jose. Let's say that Kevin Ball is ready to return, because that's plausible. The Flames,
it's most realistic.
Well, and I mean, he'll have time to skate over the break. He'll be able to because he's injured. I think at this point, he hasn't returned to skating yet. He's coming off what we believe to be
with
a concussion.
The team.
Hasn't skated yet with the team, yes. That's what I mean. Hasn't practiced yet. So I think at this point, now that we're Thursday and their final game before the break is Saturday, I think we can assume that he's not coming back. But he'll be able to skate with coaches and be able to skate with team personnel over the break. Other guys, healthy guys, aren't able to, I don't believe, but injured players are, and he'll still be considered injured. So then he can get some good high-paced skates in, start to work into the inevitable captain skates that you know will happen. I know a lot of guys are kind of relocating to go do some captain skates and going to some warmer climate, still booking ice times, but also getting kind of a hybrid vacation in there. I don't know about Flames players, but I know some NHL players around the league are doing that. But then you come back, they practice on the Tuesday the 18th, and they'll be able to have, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, 5 practice days if they want. I don't think they'll do practice every single day, but they've got 5 days of team practice, sanctioned team practice as well. So let's assume his Ball is ready to come back afterwards. I still think, Vix, they need another left-shot defenseman. In an ideal world, I think they need another left-shot defenseman for the organizational depth going forward, and from now until the end of the regular season, I think another left shot D makes a lot of sense. To give Mackenzie Weegar a permanent partner and to keep Mackenzie on the right, to give themselves a little bit more depth and not feeling like you're kind of working a jigsaw puzzle, but with, you know, not ideal pieces, but you give yourself some depth all of a sudden in your 5, 6, 7, and now you have options instead of just things you're trying. And so I think that that is an area that the Flames could really be served to look at between now and the trade deadline or between now and the start of next season, because I don't think it needs to urgently be done this season, but if they could, obviously it would help right now as well.
Yeah, because outside of Braden Pahal, and a little bit of a hat tip to him as well for the work he's been able to do in that third pair, your other three defensemen have been rotated in and out all season long. And to your point, Mackenzie Weegar has not had a consistent partner the same way that Rasmus Anderson had with Ball. And I say this not to disparage Joel Hanley or Jake Bean or Tyson Barry, but if you would have had a Ball-type partner for Mackenzie Weegar, and I do believe that in that sense, in that case, Weegar probably gets a longer look for Hockey Canada at the Four Nations faceoff, to be perfectly honest with you. Again, that's not necessarily to say that Hanley in particular wasn't able to step in and give quality minutes, but if you have an anchor partner the way Anderson does and Kevin Ball for Mackenzie Weegar, and that's not to say that Weegar also got shortchanged or anything by Hockey Canada, and I do still think that that last position is earmarked for Drew Doughty, but you just wonder, what other level could you even unlock in Mackenzie Weegar right now with how he's playing if you had somebody that was as dependable as Ball playing on his left side the same way that Anderson does?
So that's why I think that there's still a lot of merit in the conversation about maybe trying to go and get somebody. And that's not like Ilya Solovyov's not going to play in this game on Thursday. That's not to suggest that he doesn't still have a spot in the organization, or Jan Kuznetsov or whatever. But those guys profile a little bit more as third pairing guys in the NHL, right? Whereas, so in this case, you're looking for somebody that can maybe be a permanent fit for Mackenzie Weegar. And so in doing that, it also has to make sense. It also has to make sense for the Flames, what they're doing, where they're going, what Craig Conroy's plan is, and the age range that they're looking to spend assets on. The Flames aren't looking to go and spend a lot of assets on somebody that doesn't fit their age range and they don't feel like they're going to grow with in the long term, right?
Yeah, the key phrase is age appropriate that Conroy used in Frost and Farabee when they were acquired from the Philadelphia Flyers. And I'm glad that you mentioned, like, this doesn't necessarily have to be a now to the deadline thing. Like, there's no real urgency other than the fact that you're battling the Vancouver Canucks right now for the final playoff spot from the Western Conference. But the fact of the matter is what you're looking for is a 23 to maybe 26 year old defenseman that can play top 4 minutes now. And typically those players aren't readily available, just like a top 6 right shot center that is age 23 to 24 years old isn't readily available. So don't get me wrong, Craig Conroy, I guarantee you in a heartbeat, if he can make a deal work to find one that makes sense from a cost-benefit analysis standpoint,
right,
would jump on it, just like he would if there would happen to be another center on the market that was a right shot. But teams don't give those up very readily, and the chances are if you have a 24-year-old that's able to play 20 minutes a night, he's in your lineup playing 20 minutes a night, and you're more than thrilled to have him both what he is now and what he will be in the future. So, again, you got to be a little bit patient in this exercise of who could they find? Who could they go out and trade for? Where is that market inefficiency on the other end that you can maybe exploit and lower the acquisition cost so that it fits everything that you're trying to do? It's not an easy task.
So in saying all that, you know, you could be listening right now. Okay, well, that's all great, you idiot. So, yeah, that's really easy.
Sweet, thanks.
Why don't you give us some ideas then? Well, we do. We have some ideas. You and I, over the last number of days, have kind of looked at some different names, two names that we're unanimous on, and then you also added two interesting ones to the conversation as well. So here are some names that I think, and these aren't the only ones in the NHL, but here are ones that I think could fit exactly what you and I are talking about, could fit exactly the idea of younger, guys that the Flames can grow with, a guy that can step in and help the team now, but also a guy that can be with this group for more than just this season and can be a longer-term fit. Number one is Calgary product, and I've been talking about this guy going back to last season, and I still think that there is a ton of reason to pinpoint on him. And that's Olin Zellweger of the Anaheim Ducks, who had an incredible rookie year in the American League last year with 37 points in 44 games. He's played 40 games with the Ducks this year in his second pro season. He just turned 21 in September. We're talking about a guy who is essentially a first-round pick. He's a high second-round pick at 34th overall. He is an extremely gifted skater, has some really nice offensive instincts, and but also is a guy that can log some minutes, and I think would be, at the age of 21, for a guy that doesn't seem to be necessarily in Anaheim's plans right now. He's getting healthy scratched. He's kind of been cycling through with Hellison and Mintikov, and so the word is, or the feel is, that, you know, Anaheim prefers larger defensemen, and Anaheim prefers guys with a little bit more size. Zellweger's 5'10", 187, listed at Hockey DB, but you pair him with a guy like Mackenzie Weegar, both extremely gifted skaters, and not like guys that skate well. Like, we're not talking about Cale Makar skaters, but guys who skate well, who work their tails off. Like, I think there's a little bit of Weegar and Zellweger. I think that, you know, there's a really good fit. He is a left shot. He's 21, and I don't think it would be impossible to pry him out of Anaheim.
See, I'll disagree on two different elements on Zellweger in particular.
You mentioned semantics. Is this going to be
very little?
Okay.
I just don't think where Anaheim is right now, they'd be willing to part with a 21-year-old defenseman. He has been healthy scratched, but I think that's more of a learning adjustment for him, his first year in the NHL, as opposed to, you know what, they've seen what they like in him and what they don't like in him through 40 games. He's still averaging 19 minutes a night when he's in. I'd be curious to see what that element. Now, if he is available, the flip side is, does he profile too much like what you already have in the organization in terms of the young defensemen you have coming up?
I do think he's a gettable guy. Just a couple of things that I've heard. I do think that he's a guy that you could pry out of there. Not for cheap. Like, I don't think you're getting it
pennies on the dollar. No, that's not a market inefficiency so much as a change of location, maybe?
Yeah, and I mean, he isn't playing very high up in their lineup, but he's also 21. But he would be given more opportunity here if that was a guy they acquired.
I just wonder, and he is a left shot, and some of these guys that I'll mention are right shots, but you've got Perek, you've got Muse, you've got Etienne Morin. I'll shy away from putting Jeremy Poirier into that conversation, but you do have a lot of prospects coming. Not all those prospects are going to hit, but as we talked to Scott Wheeler of The Athletic a couple weeks back in profiling what the Flames have in their prospect pool, they've got quite a few young defensemen that sort of slant the two-way to maybe skew a little bit more offensively in the system, and you've only got so much room for that. Now, Zellweger's ahead of the curve when you're comparing guys that are still in the junior ranks. You know what you're going to get more from him night in, night out at an NHL level than you do an Etienne Morin, who's never played a pro game.
He's only 2 years older than Morin.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying is, you know more about Olin Zellweger and the fact that he's actually going to get to the NHL, but you're not going to set your lineup with four Olin Zellweger types. You're going to have Rasmus Anderson, Mackenzie Weegar as sort of your 1-2. You're going to have a ball, and then you've how many more?
We're going
to
have a ball.
We're going to have a ball. How many more offensive type undersized defensemen can you have in your lineup night in, night out at the NHL level? Would be my hesitation going that route with Zellweger, but I understand the theory. And the fact that he's more of a known quantity at this level, I can see him jumping to the head of that queue, not ahead of Perek, mind you, but sort of that other subsection of groupings.
Well, he's also a left shot, which I think is really important to point out. Like, when we talk about, for instance, Perek, that's a right shot, right?
Right.
And so if we're talking about Henry Muse, right shot, so knowing that teams rightfully so
Poirier's left.
I gotta Morin's be honest. Left. I don't include Poirier right now. I think he needs a lot of work still. Whereas, yes, Morin left shot, but of those three guys who I think are the top three group, and Brustevich right shot as well. So if you were to ask me, like, who are the top four prospect defensemen on the Flames, three of them are right shots. Muse, Parekh, Brustevich, and then you've got Morin, who's a left shot.
In fairness, because your two top defensemen currently in the NHL are both right shots as well. I just wonder about leaning too far into the profile of a smaller offensive-minded defenseman. That said, I think he would fit into the room perfectly. He would fit in right now, and then you create that internal competition a little bit later.
So. I just like good defensemen, man. If you're a good defenseman who can play in the league and can help a blue line, I mean, if you're going to go Ball, who's the hulking the hulking physical guy with Anderson, you could do Bean with Uyghur, and then you could do Zellweger with Pahal. You could flip Bean and Zellweger. I think going forward, I don't have a problem with him being a little smaller because you can always find – more
Foils?
Physical, like they found Eric Gudbranson in free agency, right, and brought him in, and they acquired Nikita Zadorov. Like those guys that would play on your third pairing for the most part, I think you can find if you're really hell bent on getting that.
All right, let's talk some of the other options that are on the list here, and maybe we can find a foil.
I don't feel like I have convinced you on Zellweger.
I'm
convinced. He's of the guys we're gonna. Well, at the end we'll do a power rankings,
okay.
But I can tell you he's number one on my power rankings of guys to go get.
Okay, he's not on mine, but
well,
I understand where
he's
got to
be on your power rankings.
He was on my list. I sent you my list.
Okay, he's just not number one.
He's not number one.
Would this guy be number one? Matias Samuelsson of the Buffalo Sabres. Now I know everybody is enamored with Bowen Byram,
yep.
And as they should be. I'm just, for the time being, not expecting Byram to be dealt. If Bowen Byram is available, well, then, yeah, he's number one on your power ranking. But I've just heard a lot, and I'm not suggesting that there's no way. I've just heard a lot that they really like the fit of Byram in Buffalo, and he might be one of the guys that they feel like they want to continue building with. And so I know that, you know, you go take a look at Frank Saravalli's trade targets. Byram is on there, and I'm not suggesting that there's no way he could get dealt, but the word that I've heard from a few different people who know Buffalo a whole lot more is that Byram's been the best fit with Dahlin. And Dahlin, who's a left shot but plays the right for the most part, Dahlin is you know, a franchise defenseman. And if you really like the fit with Byram there, I can understand them keeping them. Then there's Matias Samuelsson, who is a left shot, who is currently not playing. He's a little banged up right now, but he's got 185 NHL games under his belt. He does not profile as the small skilled defenseman. 6'4", 227, and is a nice, solid left side guy that I think would be a decent foil for a player like Mackenzie Uyghur.
Well, and he fits that age range at 24. His ice time's down 2 minutes per game year over year, so maybe you can find a little bit of a marketing efficiency there. But his cap hit of $4.3 million through 2029, 2030 is obviously an attractive characteristic of how he profiles, because he's cost controlled at a very good number for a really long time. No doubt about it, Bowen Byram would be the bigger splash here. But I do wonder if there's something to be had out of Buffalo in terms of Matias Samuelsson. And again, left shot, he has the size, as you mentioned, cost control that are very reasonable dollar, especially with the cap projected to jump the way it is. He's a guy that I think could slide into Calgary's top four tomorrow, you know, pending health and all that sort of thing. Maybe I'm being a little hyperbolic when I say tomorrow. But he's also a guy that if you end up having a bunch of players develop and jump him in the queue in terms of your depth chart down the road, 2, 3, 4 years down the road, you're still okay with him slotting lower in your top six.
Matias Samuelsson, not Swedish, by the way. One of the he was born in Philly, obviously has Swedish roots. But look, I think
did I call him a Swedish defenseman? Or
no, no, I'm just saying, you would think,
yeah,
when hearing from him, hearing about him, you're like, oh, well, he'd be obviously, he would obviously be from Sweden. But no, he is not. He was born in Philadelphia. And there are reasons for that. I really, really like the idea, because Chel Samuelson's his dad, who played for the Flyers, and that's why he was born in Philly. So that's the connection there. I really like the idea of Samuelsson as well. Different profile, different type of player than Zellweger. I think Zellweger is potentially more of an impact maker. He's a little younger, so I think there's a higher ceiling and more potential of that ceiling still being gotten to because he's a little bit younger. But I think Samuelsson, cost certainty, slight market inefficiency, I think would clearly be in a top four role here in Calgary. Those are the two guys that, you and I have both identified kind of like independently, but we're pretty unanimous on that, are. Yeah, exactly.
Okay, let me toss.
We're simpatico. So now there's two others that you threw out. They both play on the same team, and they both happen to play in the Pacific Division.
Do you want to start with the big one or the average size one?
Go with the big hulking 26-year-old.
See, Nick Hague, for me, I think there might be a little bit of that quote-unquote market efficiency. He's buried a little bit down the depth chart. He's sixth on the team in time on ice at 15.58 per game. But again, he checks a lot of boxes with... I feel like 26 fits your age range. I know it's probably skews a little bit older than what you're looking for, but these are also defensemen, and finding guys that are in that 23, or if you want to go down to 21 with Zellweger, but finding... U25 defenseman is going to be a very difficult task to do. Hague's 26, 6'6", 245-pound left shot, and is a pending restricted free agent. I just wonder if there might be something you could do with Vegas there, who, again, they're right up against the cap as it stands right now, and they might get the luxury of a jolting cap number going up again, and so that might relieve a little bit of pressure. But I wonder if there might not be something there where you can go to Vegas and say, hey. The other thing, too, is their entire decor essentially is locked up long-term as it stands right now. Only Pietrangelo isn't signed through 2027-28. So all your top five defensemen in Vegas are on long-term deals outside of the most important one, and you just get a sense that that's going to get done at some point. Obviously not in the near immediate future, but I just, with where he slots on the depth chart and the fact that you've got so many players ahead of him locked up long term, Hague would be a guy I'd try to take a look at.
So I don't mind the player, but much like you were skeptical that Anaheim would move off of Zellweger,
yeah.
I don't think Vegas, this season anyway, would be moving off of Hague. Like, that might be a guy that you can go after in the offseason as a pending RFA, and maybe you can exploit a situation in Vegas there. But I think Hague Vegas has one goal. They don't care who they lose this offseason. They are balls to the wall for a Stanley Cup. And so Nick Hague's a regular everyday six for them. I don't see them trading Hague this year anyway. He would be a guy
right.
that maybe after the postseason's done, you know, Craig Conroy goes and says, hey, it's going to be hard for you guys to sign him. We'll give you an asset. You can go replace him internally, and we'd love to have Hague, and we can sign him because we've got the cap room and you don't.
Yeah, and this whole conversation you prefaced is in the near term, not necessarily this season, can be something that's accomplished in the offseason. That would be if I'm still looking for a left shot defenseman to play in my top four next year, that's one of the calls I'm making.
Now, one of the
guys
that would probably replace Hague in the organization, and this one's this guy is not quite as good of a profile because he shoots right, but there's also a guy who's kind of tweening right now between Henderson and Vegas, and that's Caden Korzak, formerly of the Kelowna Rockets.
Yeah, so it's funny because I'm like, do you want to go with the big one or the more average size? Well, he's still 6'3", 200 pounds, just turned 24 9 days ago in Korzak, and he's a guy that hasn't necessarily been able to break through that Vegas blue line like we talked about with Hague being so far down the depth chart. Korzak's behind him a little bit. This isn't necessarily as perfect a fit because, as you mentioned, he shoots right, so now you're forcing Mackenzie Weegar perhaps to the left side, but he would be somebody that, okay, you go down the list and you're talking and Hague isn't going to be available. Okay, well, what are you going to do with this guy? Because he's not able to crack your top six, and you're not going to be doing him any favors trying to get him to continue to develop in the minors. He's not going to be waiver exempt he might even require waivers as it stands now. He's just one of those guys where you look at and go, okay, you're trying to identify U25 defensemen that you think can be a player in your top four. He would be one I'd take a look at, maybe explore and see if it can work out that way.
Before we hit the text line, let's do our power rankings. I'll go first. It would be Zellweger 1, Samuelson 2, Hague 3, and then because he's a right shot, Korzak would be 4.
See, I would go Hague, Samuelson.
Hague 1.
Yeah.
So you'd be cool waiting until...
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fine. I think that's perfectly fair.
Yeah, and just because of the other element, too, here is, are you trying to win this year, or are you trying to set yourself up a little bit further? I just look and
that's
perhaps,
why I like Zellweger so much, because he's 21.
Well, he's got the longest runway for remaining development,
and I think he's
got
the highest ceiling. I honestly think he's got the. I think that he has the opportunity to be the best defenseman of the group. And that's why I'm like, yeah, go get that guy.
I think he has the potential to be the best offensive defenseman, but I don't know necessarily.
I don't know if he's as one. I don't know if he's as one dimensional as you're painting it to be.
Now you're the
prospects guy, but just from people I've spoken to, I think there's a really good player there.
The reason I go Hag one is maybe because I'm looking for exactly Kevin Ball for Mackenzie Weegar, and to me, Nick Hag is exactly Kevin Ball for Mackenzie Weegar.
Yeah, and I don't mind that as a suggestion at all.
And then Samuelson, just with the age, the contract, he does shoot left. He has played top 4 minutes in the NHL before. That's my number two, and then Zellweger three. Korzak's a distant four.
He's
one I would
age
explore.
Wise is okay, but he's a right shot. You've got a lot of those.
Yeah,
that's part of the problem, is you've got too many right shots, and you've got guys shooting right, playing the left, which isn't. With Weegar, isn't a bad thing. With everybody else, it kind of is. And Miramanov hasn't done enough to prove that he should be on the right side every single night either. Let's get to the text line at 960-960. Fun conversation that just kind of came out of nowhere when you and I were waiting for Jared Bednar to talk on Thursday morning, and here we are. Good segment out of it. Dylan and Revy, when it comes to Olin Zellweger, I think you got to think about the difference in motivation of Ducks management compared to Greg Cronin. There's a joke amongst the fantasy hockey community, the black hole of youth Cronin. Zellweger will without a doubt last longer than the coaching staff that won't play him. I don't think it's just a coaching thing. I think organizationally, Anaheim skews more physical, more size when it comes to their blue line. Take a look at who Pat Verbeek has gone out and acquired, from Jacob Trouba to Radko Gudas. You see Drew Helison playing. They feel like, right or wrong, they skew more towards physicality and size, which is why I do think there could be an inefficiency with Zellweger. This says Vancouver doesn't seem to value Akito Hirose anymore on the smaller side, but quick and smart, low cap hit too. He's only got, like, he'd be fine, but you'd be, and I like him, he's a Calgary product too, but is he a full-time NHLer? Like, that would be more of a banking on the high reward with the low risk, but I don't know if that high reward is going to be there or not.
Yeah, I would agree with you on that one for sure.
Is a trade to bring back Shillington a possibility? I don't think so. I also think, you know, even if it was, Shillington no longer necessarily fits the age range the same way. I mean, he'll be 28 in May. So Shillington is not in that age range anymore. Now, if all of a sudden there was a cheap deal in free agency this summer to bring him back, yeah, but I think in terms of a trade, probably not. This says, how about Carson Soucy? I think too old to be giving up significant assets for. Not that I don't like, but I feel like that would keep a Solovyov or a Kuznetsov from playing, where I don't think some of these other guys would necessarily do that the same way. And the part of the reason I say that is because Soucy's also signed for next year.
Well, and is that going to be a player that, respectfully, you're going to want 3, 4, 5 years down the road still in your lineup?
Right.
Which goes to the age-appropriate sort of mantra that Craig Conroy has been touting.
Somebody suggests Alexiak. Again, age-wise, not in that sweet spot. This says, would you think about offer sheeting Hag with him being an RFA, assuming he would be eligible? I would just go make a trade. Like, try. I think that you probably could get Hag for cheaper than what the offer sheet price would be, perhaps. And also, don't piss Vegas off. Like, instead, go and make a trade for him and see if you. And Craig Conroy and Kelly McCrimmon have got a very good relationship. I know that. So, you know, go and make that type of deal, as opposed to pissing Krimmer off.
Cut out the middleman here, if you will, and just go right to their GM and say, hey, what would it take? What are you desiring now? What do you cover? As opposed to, I mean, I'm all for offer sheets, but I feel like in this situation, the soft glove approach would be better.
What are your thoughts on offer sheeting Bowen Byram? I mean, sure, why not? That's one guy that I'd be fine doing. Again, I do think that there's a pretty decent chance that Buffalo will figure it out with him. But I also thought that with Colorado, and then they trade him to Buffalo. So I could be completely off base on that front. Byram, 3.85 right now. He will be RFA with Arbrights this summer.
I feel like he would be north of that 6.871 ledge that would cost you a first, a second, and a third. I don't mind that from an acquisition cost. But if you get anywhere north of 9.1, you're looking at two firsts, a second, and a third.
Somebody suggests Morrissey. Probably not going to get Josh Morrissey out of Winnipeg. You know, it's core player, franchise piece. This says, good segment. I'd settle for any of the four you mentioned. Curious to see how it turns out. Somebody suggests Lacombe in Anaheim. I feel like he might be a little bit more difficult to get out of there. Just because, again, he's a big boy. Zellweger's quote-unquote undersized. Lacombe, still young, but he's 6'2", 200-plus pounds. It's a much larger guy that profiles a little bit more the way Anaheim wants their blue line to look. And I'm not saying Anaheim's right or wrong for preferring size and physicality, but because that's the case, I think it kind of does potentially mean that Zellweger might not get as long a look there as he probably should and could in other organizations.
The other thing for Anaheim, too, is they're going to end up or do actually now have a surplus of that U23 defense core that you can't get them all into your lineup. So if and when that does make a Zellweger type available, if they're skewing with, okay, we want our young defensemen to still be north of 6'2 and can play a bit more physical, that would make Zellweger available.
Aaron Vickers, Pat Steinberg, this hour of Flames Talk is underway. Can't find the latest episodes of your favorite HGTV, Discovery, and Food Network shows? Well, Rogers Xfinity TV has the newest seasons of the top-rated shows on these popular channels, while other providers are no longer including them in their TV lineup. If your TV provider doesn't carry these channels, you're missing out on new seasons of Celebrity IOU, Hometown, Beat Bobby Flay, Expedition X, and more. Don't be fooled by other channels pretending to be these networks you know and love. Get the latest with Rogers Xfinity TV at Rogers.com.
This is Flames Talk. Join the conversation at 960-960. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Happy Thursday, and time now for the Daily Flames Roundtable, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills, just minutes from the airport, with Aaron Vickers of NHL.com. My name is Pat Steinberg, and now Derek Wills, the voice of the Flames, joins us here in the Hot Stove Lounge of the Dome to complete our Daily Flames Roundtable. Gents, some changes on defense for Thursday night versus Colorado, as we talked about off the top. And one of those changes sees Daniil Miramanov come back in, and that kind of shuffles everything up a little bit. Miramanov comes back in. He'll play with Uyghur. That moves Bean back to play with Pahal, and that bumps Barry out of the lineup. But, you know, Miramanov's been a really interesting story ever since they acquired him a little less than a year ago in that trade with the Vegas Golden Knights. How does this guy stay in the lineup? What does Daniil Miramanov need to do to be a full-time NHL defenseman and to be full-time with this Flames blue line?
Well, I must admit, I was a little bit surprised watching the morning skate when Ilya Solovyov was not on one of the three pairings. But then, having had a chance to chat with Ryan Huska afterwards, the Wranglers are coming off their all-star break. So give the guy a practice. Let him get up to speed.
He'll get a full practice in likely on Friday, too.
Yeah. So I suspect we probably see him in the final game before the break on Saturday. And I quite like Jake Bean and Braden Pahal together. So reuniting that pairing makes a lot of sense. As far as Daniil Miramanov goes, I'm going to answer your question with a question. Who is Daniil Miramanov? Because I don't know. I don't know who he is as a player. I don't know what he is as a player. Last season, he looked like a guy who had some offensive upside. You know, comes over from the Golden Knights, 3 goals and 7 points in 20 games with the Flames. And I thought, okay, this guy might turn into something. But this year, he hasn't been good offensively with 1 goal and 6 points in 34 games. He's not great defensively. He's a pretty big guy. I mean, you look at his size, he's 6'4", 207, but I don't think he plays 6'4", 207. So I just think he has to find an identity. Who are you? Are you a good 200-foot guy? I think that's who he wants to be. I think that's who the Flames think he can be. If you're not going to be that guy, though, you've got to be really good defensively or really good offensively. You've got to be something. I just don't know who he is, guys.
I don't know if there is a path for him this season to be a guy that plays every single game from here on out. Consistency is a big issue in his game. As you mentioned, Wilsey, he's an offensive defenseman that doesn't produce offensively, so you need to be a lot better in your own zone. It's funny because I was just looking up sort of what the vitals were on Calgary's defense. We were talking about Olin Zellweger before and trying to sort out, okay, well, is this a small defense? When you take ball away, how much smaller does it get? So on and so forth. And then you see Miramanov in 6'4", and it's like, well, yeah, that checks out. He walks by us every single day, and he's a big man. Mm-hmm. But I don't think opposing forwards know that he's 6'4", because he doesn't necessarily play that way. And part of the reason why I say I don't know if there's a path for him to be an everyday member of the Flames for the duration of the season is because there's really only one spot he can play. He's not going to take the top pairing spot from Rasmus Anderson. I don't think he's going to take the third pairing spot from Braden Pahal. So really, that
we
only leaves
saw
that.
Him on. We saw him on the left for that game in Seattle, and it was it was not good.
So to be perfectly honest, if you're not going to, if you're only available to play the right side in the middle pair and push Mackenzie Weegar to the left side, I don't think that's necessarily ideal in terms of slotting for Miramanov, and I don't think you necessarily want to be doing that regularly with Mackenzie Weegar. Not to say that Mackenzie Weegar can't play that left side, because we've seen him play it quite well at times this season, but if your only spot is to come into the lineup and play it in the top four, but you're not producing offensively and you're not doing enough defensively to warrant staying there aren't a whole lot of options in terms of slotting where he's going to be able to play.
To answer my own question, I would say that he needs to be steady. He needs to really hone in his decision making. Like, we have seen far too many times, and a big reason why he gets back in and then a few games later or one game later comes out is because I believe the last game he played, Wilsey, was the game in Winnipeg, and on that night the last game he played was the Seattle game, but the last time he played in a top four role was against Winnipeg, where he made a couple egregious mistakes. He got walked on the Kyle Connor goal, and he found himself pinching way down low on the backbreaker goal that made it 3-1, if I remember correctly. It was one of those nights where you just were seeing way too many mistakes, and he's had too many of those nights where his reads down the wall are poor and his decisions to jump into the rush are not as well timed as they should be. And so I know that he's trying to push it offensively and help the team in that regard, but you've got to pick your spots better, and so what he needs to do is hone in the decision-making, still be able to be a little more aggressive when he's in the offensive zone of putting more pucks on net. I think that's an important thing, and the final thing I'll say is easy enough, but just, like, keep it simple defensively, and that goes back to the reads thing as well. But I think that we're starting to get to a really interesting point in Miramanov's time with the Flames. I know he's under contract for next year. They signed him to a 2-year deal. But when the Flames acquired Miramanov, they had Brstevich. It was about a month after they got Brstevich, but they did not have Zane Parekh, a very highly touted right side defenseman, and they didn't have Henry Muse, a very highly touted right side defenseman. So now if you're Miramanov, like, they brought him in at a time where they didn't have a lot of players that potentially profiled like him as a guy who can push the offense from the blue line. Now they do. And so if you're Miramanov, I think that there's a little bit more heat turned up in terms of, okay, every opportunity you get, you got to prove to Ryan Huska, you got to prove to Craig Conroy that, yeah, this is the organization that you need to still stay in. So, I think it's a big night for Miramanov, especially to your point, Wilsey, because there's Ilya Solovyov kind of lurking with an opportunity to play Saturday against Seattle.
Yeah, and the Flames gave him a fairly long leash to start the season. He played in 28 of the first 30 games, and he's now been a healthy scratch in 17 of the last 23 games. And I'm sure that's in his head, in a sense, too, right? He probably feels like he's got to go out there and do something to stay in the lineup. But I also think that he's in his own head, because I think naturally, as a guy who used to be a forward, he believes that he can contribute offensively. But he's also being told, listen, you have to be more reliable defensively. So I think he's probably overthinking it out there. Do I go? And then if you're thinking about do I go instead of just reacting and going, then you're spending an extra second making that decision, and then maybe it's too late to go at that point. So he's probably a guy who was given too long a leash in hindsight. Now, it's easy for me to say that now, and the Flames are trying to figure out if he could be a top four guy, so I understand why they played him in 28 of the first 30 games this season. But, you know, now it's kind of flipped the other way, where he probably needs some reps to figure out who he is as a player and how he has to play to be effective and to stay in the lineup. And, Aaron, I think you make a great point. You see Joel Hanley, who has been the 8, who has been the 7, and who has played on the left side of all three pairings. He's got versatility. He can move up and down. He can move in and out.
Yep.
Daniil Miramanov is going to be either in with Mackenzie Weegar or out. Not a lot of options there.
I wonder, and this is just sort of me trying to put myself in Miramanov's shoes, but I wonder if he feels the pressure to be noticeable when it's the exact opposite in terms of where he is right now. If you can be invisible for 60 minutes, that means you haven't done anything glaring the other way and play that consistent, safe, dependable game. To me, that's what would keep him in the lineup more regularly.
Like Joel Hanley.
Like Joel Hanley. Yeah.
Daily Flames Roundtable, Derek Wills, Aaron Vickers, Pat Steinberg on this Thursday. Guys, Dryden Hunt recalled by the Flames on Thursday morning. Will not play against the Avalanche. He'll be the 13th forward in this game. But you go take a look at what he's done in the American League this year, how big he's been for the Wranglers. It's kind of crazy that we haven't seen Dryden Hunt play in an NHL game this year. And I don't think that it has anything to do with Hunt the player. I think it has more to do with they know what Hunt is, and they'd like to see what some of the other guys are. And you've got a guy with 40 points and 41 games in the American League, so let him continue to be one of the leaders on the Wranglers. But recalled on Thursday. How valuable is a player like Hunt, 29 years old, how valuable is he in any organization, but specifically how valuable is he in this Flames organization?
You know what I think it is? I think it's that he's not a centerman.
I think in terms of why he hasn't been recalled,
I think he would have been out months ago if he played center. But he is a winger, and I think you know exactly what you're going to get from Dryden Hunt at the NHL level. I really liked his game, and he's one of those guys who can transition from being a top six guy in the AHL, leads the Wranglers in points this season, to an effective bottom six player in the NHL, playing that energy role. And I thought he played it really consistently well during his time with the Flames last season. And he's also a guy who's got a lot of experience. He's played in 230 NHL games with the Panthers, Coyotes, Rangers, Avalanche, Maple Leafs, and Flames. So Dryden Hunt is a guy who I think you love to have in your organization. I am a little bit surprised it took him this long to get recalled. Now, he plays primarily on the left side. So if you're looking for a fourth-line left winger, which the Flames haven't been this season because that is Ryan Lomberg's role, then, yeah, you give him a look. But because they haven't looked for that guy, they've looked for a centerman or they've looked for a right winger, you know, Dryden Hunt's been left behind. And I don't think it's any fault of his. It just happens to be the position he plays and the way he shoots. But, you know, I think you could move Lomberg to the right or you could put Hunt on the right and both guys could still be effective playing on their offside. But if he was a centerman, I think he would have been recalled a long time ago. I still think the Flames would love to upgrade that fourth-line center spot, and that's not me taking a shot or a drive-by for Kevin Rooney. It just that fourth line hasn't been effective enough for the last couple of months. I thought they were really good to start the season, but they haven't been good enough since then, and Ryan Huska has said as much himself, and they keep saying the same thing over and over again. But, man, if they could find a right shot center to play on their fourth line and help them kill penalties, that would be a huge add between now and the trade deadline. But, you know, when Dryden Hunt gets in, if that's maybe Saturday when the Kraken come to town or maybe it'll be after the break, I'm sure they'll send him back down and then call him back up if that is what they're planning to do. But, you know, he's a guy who I think is going to bring some energy and maybe to help give that fourth line a much-needed identity again.
He's damn near a perfect pro in the sense that you can have him up and he can skate a regular shift in the NHL in your bottom six if need be. You can send him down and he can play top line minutes. And he's tied for fourth in the AHL in scoring. So he's able to fill multiple roles within the organization. You know that if he's in the AHL, he's not down there sulking or pouting, and he's helping your prospects learn what it takes to be a pro day in, day out, and they can lean on him as a guy that has a lot of experience both at the NHL level and at the American Hockey League level. So there's a mentorship element there as well. He's just a guy that you get why organizations would love a player and a person like him, because he can – again, he can basically fill any role you need within reason in your organization, whether it's a top six scorer in the minors and a mentor in the minors, or come up and give you dependable minutes. And to your point, I agree. I think that he would have been up here basically after Justin Kirkland went down had he been a center. Unfortunately, he's not a center. And I am curious a little bit to see where and how he slots, because you mentioned you can go to that left side, you move Lomberg to the right. I'd even be tempted to try him on that third line with Sharon Govich and Frost and bump Pospisil down to fourth line center and see if you can ignite the fourth line that way.
I think the other main part why Hunt hasn't been up is because he's 29. And I really do think that they have looked at it and said, okay, we'd rather get a look at Pelche. And this is not a knock on Hunt, but we want to know what Pelche is. And I think getting Pelche up when they did was a big reason why they were able to use him in the trade with Philadelphia.
That's a good point.
And Walker Duehr, same thing. We want to make sure that we know exactly what we've got with Duehr. He's having a great year in the American League. Again, younger than Hunt. And so I think that's another reason why, because they know exactly, as you guys have both said, you know what you're going to get from Dryden Hunt. So there's no harm in keeping him in the American League because you don't have any question marks. You have no misconceptions about what Hunt's going to do. He's going to come in, he's going to give you good minutes, and you know that at some point when you, if you haven't found solutions elsewhere, or guys get hurt, or whatever the case may be, you know you've got a very reliable option in Hunt. And so now Pelche's no longer here, and Bishop hasn't worked as a natural center playing that fourth line role. His waiver days started to tick, and he hasn't been playing, so you send him back and stop the waiver clock, and you bring up a guy like Hunt, too. Again, he's not going to play against Colorado, but could very well play against Seattle on Saturday, and you know exactly what you're going to get. And so that partially is what I think has kept him down at times, but is also what almost guaranteed at some point he was going to come up.
Yeah, and I mean, when Connor Zeri comes back, I think there's a chance that Martin Pospisil moves down to the fourth line because the Flames are going to have one too many top nine forwards. But another alternative to what you suggested, Aaron, which is to play Hunt in your top nine and drop Pospisil down to the center of your fourth line, is to bump Adam Klapka back up.
That could be an option,
He played the game of his life playing on the third line when he scored a goal, had a career-high 4 shots in 7 attempts, a career-high 8 hits after he had what must have been an inspirational chat with Jerome Iginla. But Adam Klapka is a guy who, when he was given an opportunity to play on the third line, certainly made the most of it. So if you do want to try Pospisil as your fourth line centerman, that's another option for the Flames. But again, when you get Zeri back, and hopefully that'll be right after the Four Nations break, then you're going to have some more decisions to make. But looking forward to seeing maybe Dryden Hunt on Saturday. I think the same could be said for Ilya Soloviev. Flames, it's hard to believe they've only got 2 more games before a 2-week break.
I would also say this on the Dryden Hunt front. He is unrestricted at the end of this year. I wouldn't hesitate. I would re-sign. I'd give him 2 more years right now because he is exactly what you need in the organization. You know, give him it's a two-way deal, NHL minimum, whatever that is. $775 was what he's at right now. So whatever the NHL minimum will be next year, $800, something like that, give him the two-way deal and then just give it that much of a push at the American League level. He is $350 at the AHL level right now. Like, bump that to $450. Give him the big American League salary like a guy like Dryden Hunt deserves. Go big money in the American League. Keep him on an NHL min because he likes it here. He lives here. He's a Western Canadian guy, and he helps your organization.
Yeah.
And I just like those. He may not be a full-time NHLer at any point in his career, but he's a damn good quad A guy at the very, very worst.
And having spent 13 years in that league, I can't stress enough how important it is to have the right veterans there for two reasons. Number one, they're going to help you win hockey games. Number two, they're going to show your prospects the right way to do it, both on and off the ice. And I think it's one of the biggest reasons why the Calgary Wranglers have surprised the AHL with the season they've had. They've got some really good veterans down there, whether it be Clark Bishop, who just got set down, or, you know, we're talking about Dryden Hunt, Jared Tenorti, a guy who has been a captain at the AHL level before. He's another, you know, great player to mentor all of those terrific young defense prospects the Flames have playing for the Wranglers this season. I think it's been absolutely huge, and I think Brad Pascal's done a great job not just getting veteran guys, but getting the right veteran guys to lead the way down there.
That is our Daily Flames Roundtable. He's Derek Wills. He's Aaron Vickers. My name is Pat Steinberg. Daily Flames Roundtable wraps up this hour on Flames Talk. Thanks to Shan Vergy. Thanks to Connor Gronsdahl, our outstanding producers back at Sportsnet 960 World Control. And the Daily Flames Roundtable brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills just minutes from the airport.